Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
I'm Debbie Rowley.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists and cloth stabbers. Yeah. Artists and stabbers. There it is. There it is right there. Fiber Talk for artists and stabbers.
Okay.
Put that on a leather jacket and get on a motorcycle. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be having our very own lifetime show about our stabbing.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. I see it. I can see it on the leather jacket. Okay. I got it. Yep. Much going on here. I thought we were winding down, but no, we cranked up some more stuff. So tonight, do not miss tonight. Do not miss tonight. Number one, go listen to Sunday's show with Tricia Nguyen of Thistle Threads. But then do not miss tonight, because the live show, Tricia's going to be with us, and we are going to spend an hour, actually it's probably going to be an hour and a half, looking at caskets, needlework caskets, and talking about the history of them and the threads that go into them. And she's going to show us actual caskets, like originals, and the one that she created, and examples of stitching. And yeah, do not miss that tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern time on the Fiber Talk YouTube channel. Tricia Nguyen and Thistle Threads and caskets. It's probably going to be an hour and a half. We were testing the other day, and I don't know how we can get it in an hour, but it'll be worth every minute. So that's amazing stuff. Just amazing stuff. So that's tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Don't miss that. Then September 28, we start Fiber Talk Monday Night Hearts. And the catalyst for that is Gayan Rogers' Patriotica Hearts that she just released. But of course, not everybody can get that because there's a limited number and she already shipped them and that's over with. So we started out with, all right, we're going to do Gayan Rogers' hearts. Then it's going to be any heart design. And then Beth just said, look, if you have a heart, stitch. So so that's what it is. So Monday nights, I don't know if we'll have a show. I don't think we'll have an actual show. It's just going to be Monday nights and then post on Instagram the hashtag FT Monday Hearts. Because another live show is just one live show too many in a week. But we'll get it kicked off in some way and then join us. Plan to stitch on a heart design on Monday nights. Do you have a heart design? I didn't look. I was going to look.
I have put hearts in designs, but I don't think I have a heart design. But what occurs to me is if anyone is stitching hearts for hospice, they can stitch their hearts for hospice on Monday nights.
Excellent. There it is, right there. Another reason to do Monday Night Hearts. Yes. Because that is one of the cool projects.
Yeah.
Now, that's just about every A&G chapter in the country anymore, isn't it?
I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of people doing it.
There's a lot of people doing it, and I don't know if you have to be a member of A&G in order to stitch a heart. Probably not, because it's for charity. But yeah, you could probably Google and find out all kinds of stuff about hearts for hospice.
Yeah, it's. I know the Fox chapter. I know we're doing it again this year.
Right.
I'm not a participant because I don't need more projects. But
yeah, they mentioned it at the meeting last week.
What's that?
Hearts for hospice.
Oh, okay, good.
And people had more hearts ready to be finished and things like that.
It's just great. So you basically make heart ornaments. And now you have more exposure to other chapters than I do, but I know at Fox they have a local organization for kids who have lost parents, basically, family members, and basically are kind of alone. And so they get together. They get these kids together so they can just kind of be with other kids who are going through what they're going through, you know, major loss of family. And then they get to take a heart home, a heart ornament. And it's just a tremendous program. And I don't know if that's the case all over the, you know, with other chapters or if they're doing hearts for other things. Do you know?
I don't know. And this is different from the Kissing Pillows project that I think EGA was involved in, With the kissing pillows, every pillow had to be exactly the same. But I think with the hearts, I've seen several different designs.
Oh yeah, it's like whatever heart you
And
want to do, yeah.
yeah, it can be any kind of heart shape. And so, yeah.
But it's just it's well, I think it's great, number one, because the Fox chapter, and for these kids, the pictures, the first time we did it, the pictures of the kids, you just want to cry and smile at the same time for these kids. But for a Stitcher, it gets you to do a little project and then a chance to finish or learn how to finish it. And so for me, that, that's a different, that's an added thing.
And I think most of these, they're small enough that they're all stash busting. You
Yes.
just use threads that you already have. You don't have to go buy a bunch of new threads or anything, and they're small, so you can even, strength. You don't have to have huge pieces of canvas to stitch on.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's got scraps big enough to do one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you don't, you haven't done very many projects. So, yeah, just by default, you have scraps.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, no, it's a great program. So, yeah, check that out. And I'm sorry, this wasn't on the list, so no research. Is there a place at A&G's thing that the public can get to see that? Do you
I
know?
don't know. I haven't researched it either. It's the kind of thing that is kind of floating around in the back of my mind, but that I'm not really actively involved with
Yeah.
because I have so many other things I have to do. But I'm sure that it would not be difficult to find out.
Yeah. So search for that, because it's yeah, it's a way to do good things for people who need it. So, yes.
Exactly. And stitchers are very giving, and a lot of times we want to have a project or something that you can give to somebody else, and this is perfect for that. And then they could find their pattern that they want to stitch and do their heart on Monday nights with Fiber Talk.
There we go. Monday Night Hearts. That's what we're doing. So that starts the 28th, and we're just going to let that ride and see how it goes. Don't know, didn't set a time frame, just going to let it go. And basically, Monday nights, we're going to stitch on hearts, put your other stuff aside, stitch on a heart design. Or if you don't have one, but have a functioning heart, then just stitch something else, whatever. I'm not picky. Then October 4. These will be live shows. These will be live shows. October 4, Fiber Talk Meditates. So we're going to take the Friday night show and end that at the end of September, and then we're going to move it to Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern time. And we're going to do, this is all based off of Avlia, Krista West's new basket weave design, which is a meditative stitching design. And you don't have to, again, you don't have to stitch that one. You can stitch anything. But the idea is to stitch meditative designs. Those are ones where you don't have, you can just sit there and stitch. You don't have to look at a chart every 10 minutes. And you can just stitch and just let your mind relax. And if you're looking for something, if you go to avlia.life, you can get the basket weave one that's available now. And then Krista has, for several of her other designs, she has a little capital M next to them. And that means that she's designed those with meditative stitching in mind. So we're going to
Oh,
start that
okay. That's
two,
neat.
yeah, 2 o'clock Eastern time on the YouTube channel, the Fiber Talk YouTube channel. We're going to go for 8 weeks, and then but it's not just going to be stitching. We're going to have a breathing. Somebody's going to help us with breathing exercises to help you relax. We're going to have some actual meditation, just short things. We're not going to sit there for an hour and chant or anything. But techniques for that. And then we have someone who is going to basic stretching for needleworkers to keep your shoulders loose.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah, those kinds of things. And then we'll have some quiet stitching time, and then we'll have time for conversation. However that conversation manifests itself. If it's on YouTube, it'll be by posting things. But so it's going to be a collection of things going on in an hour-ish of time, all focused on meditative stitching. And the idea is to equip you to do that very thing, to take advantage of what stitching can provide by giving you a quiet time to just let your mind relax, let that tension headache go away, those kinds of things. So Join Us starts October 4 on the YouTube channel. And as always, the easiest way is to subscribe on the Fiber Talk YouTube channel. That's wetalkfiber.com/YouTube. And just subscribe, then you'll get notified. And then we're going to start that. So that's going to run 8 weeks. So that'll take us up to the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And that should get you going on a meditative project, and then also give you some weapons to help you relax more. And that's, I'm intrigued by this meditative stitching thing. I'm anxious to start this because Krista West was the one that introduced me to it. And because, I mean, you know, we all know that when we stitch, your mind starts to relax and there's good things happening. But then to have something that is designed so you don't have to look at a chart and can just sit there and just move needle and thread is intriguing. Yeah. So.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. So that's what's coming up in addition to the usual things. Now, I have to crank a little bit about starting over Royal Garden.
Okay.
You know, it was weird. I started, for those who missed out, I started Royal Garden all over because I discovered when I got the center core done with the waffle stitches that my canvas was out of square, and quite a bit out of square, because I looked down at that center thing and it's supposed to be square and it wasn't. It was leaning to the right. And I spent a lot of time trying to straighten it out. It wasn't going to because that stitching in the middle is so dense. I mean, and I didn't want to wet it, you know.
Right.
And I could just see. And then I'd yanked on that canvas enough that it was, you know, it was just getting all goofed up on the edges. And so I rolled it up and threw it in the basket. And that hurt. So I got a new canvas, and that was out of square, too. So then I wet it down, and now it's pretty well in square, and it's like within over a foot, it gets off by less than a hole off of vertical. So I'll take that. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. And now that it's been on stretcher bars, and of course, wetting it weakened it a little bit.
Right.
But now that it's been on stretcher bars, and I've had to expand those a couple, three times using the adjuster frame bars, it's straightening out and it's going to be okay. So I'm cooking along. So I finished the double fan double the other night, two nights ago. And last night.
Did you find it easier this time?
Are you kidding me? I just ripped through it. Yeah, it was easier.
Good.
Yeah. That was kind of the you know, looking for silver linings because, you know, it's a psychological battle to make yourself go back and restitch all that stuff. So I'm forcing myself to get back to where I was. And, all right, number one, because of the show that we did, and we were trying to show the double fan doubled. So I had done the initial box of Scotch stitches, and then I did the double fan doubled. And then I went back and wove the Krynek into the Scotch stitches. Do not do it that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I wouldn't recommend that.
No. I spent an awful lot of time just avoiding sticking the needle into the double fan doubled threads.
Yeah,
that was, don't do it that way. No. So this time that, you know, I flew right through that because I didn't have that big fat double fan doubled sitting in the way. So that was a plus.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because you weave through one of those Scotch stitches. And then you go down in the hole that you then need to come up in for the next one.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time the first time flipping the canvas and weaving under to come back to that hole. And this time I thought, you idiot, just spread those Scotch stitches like you and I have talked several times, spread them apart, you know, wrap the thread over one thread of canvas and then come up the hole. And, so I flew right through that. That was,
oh, good.
Yeah, that was easy. So now I'm, the crescents are next. And yeah, I know those are, I'll fly through those too. So, practice makes perfect, but I really didn't want to practice this again.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Well, you know, it illustrates a point that the first time you do something, it's going to be difficult, and you're going to have to continually look at the instructions and am I doing this right? And you have a lot of self-doubt. The third time you do it, the fourth time you do it, you're like, oh yeah, cake, I know how to do this. I don't have to look at the instructions anymore. And that's one of the things that I aim for when I'm teaching is, okay, how to approach this logically so that you don't have to look at the instructions so much and you can just enjoy the pleasure of stitching.
And if you're hearing a high-pitched noise in the background, Debbie lives in the country. Actually, I live in the city, and we have crickets too. And that's a cricket somewhere in her house. So we
Yep.
hope it takes a siesta here soon. But they tend not to.
They tend not to. And, you know, and it could be in the house, it could be outside. I don't know. We're inundated with them right now.
Now we get them. Well, when our backyard was all garden, we got them a lot, and now it's less, but we still get them in. And yeah, there's nothing. That's just annoying after a while. So sorry, folks. Can't and I can't edit that out. So there it is. It's a cricket. There we have it. So that's the plus is not having to look at the chart. Literally not having to look at the chart at all, just to restitch this thing. That's the plus.
Okay, it's this thread, it's this long, let's go.
So that's okay. I'm clinging to that silver lining desperately.
Well, and when you come to the Walnettos, have you already done the Walnettos?
No, never got that far,
Okay.
no.
Yeah, when you come to the Walnettos, you'll just breeze right through those two without having to think about
Okay, counting on that.
them.
So my canvas thing has been an interesting little journey, because I never had paid attention, because I never considered canvas to be out of square.
Right.
And so then this one was out of square, and then the Dawn to Dusk canvas, I put my square on that, and sure enough, that was out of square by just as much.
Yeah.
So in and it just drives me nuts, and I really don't want people blocking my stuff if I'm going to have it framed. I just want to avoid that, or if it has
Yeah.
to be blocked, not by very much.
Right.
So what I did is I bought a set of, they're basically dense foam blocking. It's like a puzzle goes together. And some pins. And so that Dawn to Dusk one, I'm going to block that canvas before I start stitching on it. And but I'm going to spray this. The first time I did it, I didn't know what I was doing. I just took a run at it. I just took a damp cloth and laid over it, the canvas, and didn't think that laying that cloth over it, I was wetting the center more than I was the outside. So that didn't go well. So this time I'll just spray it, mist it, and then square it up. But and I don't know how. Maybe I'm just being ridiculous about it, but I really do want that square and square before I start. So I don't know.
Well, and I think with a larger piece like Royal Garden, I think it's going to be more noticeable if something is out of square than on, say, a smaller piece that maybe is 8 by 8 or 6 by 6. Honestly, I never worry about the canvas being out of square or not. I've never had issues with the person that does my framing. She doesn't block anyway. She pins it to the foam core and then frames it, and usually it's not an issue. But you know, I stitch on EverTights and I crank those things so tight that usually it's out of square anyway. You know, like my design is 8 by 8, but by the time it gets to the framer, it's measuring 8 1/4 by 8 3/8.
It's
And
grown a
so,
bit.
yeah, it's grown a little bit because I have cranked it apart so much to get that canvas as tight as I can get it, that it's already out of square to start with. And I never worry about it that much. My framer is really good at cutting the mats to fit so that, you know, unless you're on it with a ruler, you're not going to know that the sides that it's 8 1/4 one way and 8 3/8 the other way. You'd never know it.
Yeah. Well, maybe, yeah, and of course, I tend to lock in on these things, but yeah, so I'm going to try it. That's what I'm going to try, is to square it up before I stitch on it and make sure it's square. Because, you know, I talked about this last week. I mean, I pulled out some other projects, and one was way out of square. Mm-hmm. But then the rest of them, which were smaller items, actually, as I look at it, were all dead on. So, I don't know.
Yeah, see, I think it's more noticeable the larger the project is. And Dawn to Dusk is a large project, as this Royal Garden. And so it would be more noticeable on those than it would be on a smaller thing or an ornament or something like that. And honestly, I don't think we're getting the same quality of canvas that we used to get.
No.
Because I've been stitching on canvas for almost, well, probably 20 years. And I know others who've been stitching on canvas a lot longer. I noticed a few years ago that canvas seemed a lot rougher on the surface of it than it used to be. Used to be, it didn't feel rough at all. And now all of the canvas I get feels really rough, and which makes you snag your threads more and, you know, degrades the threads more as you're stitching on them. And it's nothing I've done. It's nothing that the shops have done. It's nothing that the distributors have done. I just think this is how it's coming from the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Well, I think the same beat may be on the squaring. It may be coming this way.
Yeah. Well, that was Kathy Ray at Needle and Haystack said that that has been her experience, that that they're just not square. And you had mentioned that in a post I did on Needlepoint Nation, that you were having that that too. And it's unfortunate. And see, I did a pilot class now quite a bit ago with Curdy Biggs, and I was just having a miserable time with my thread snagging on the canvas, to the point where when it was silk, it was ruining the silk.
And so I
was having to alter my stitching techniques just to keep the thread off the canvas. And, you know, at some point, just forget it, you know. And then somebody said, well, turn the canvas over. And I did not try that. I have to say, I did not. I was not a good pilot class student because I did not finish it. And a big part of that was it was just so annoying all the time.
Well, and a lot of, you know, like for Curdy, a lot of the classes that she does, she paints the canvas to get a different color. And you can't turn the canvas over if that's the case.
Right, right. And that's kind of frustrating if that's what we're getting. It's just kind of generally frustrating. I don't know what, probably isn't a good solution. But like you said, for most things, I think would suggest 10 inches or smaller. It probably doesn't much matter.
I don't think it does. I don't think it much matters. And that's not the cut size of the canvas. That's the design size. So, you know, on a 10 inch square design, I would be on 16 inch canvas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, that one drove me nuts. So I'm going to block the other one and see how I do. Because once you wet it a little bit, I mean, it gained flexibility. I could square it up without too much trouble. So
see, the canvas comes with sizing in it. And dampening it breaks that sizing. And I think, and it's not on the surface of the canvas, I think it's actually in the fiber itself.
Yeah.
And because you can't, you know, okay, well, I'll just get some fabric sizing and do it. No, because then you're coating the surface of the canvas and you're going to obscure the holes and possibly transfer onto your threads. And so it's a different kind of technique. It's not, and spray starch or liquid starch or whatever is not going to replace the sizing. I don't know of anything that would replace the sizing once you've gotten it wet.
Yeah, you and I had talked about this a little bit before the show, and then I did some research, and I could not find anybody who could even hint at restoring stiffness to the canvas. But I will say, as abusive as I was to that piece that I'm using right now, it didn't lose so much. It didn't lose enough sizing that it matters in stitching. It's still stitching just fine. So, it's not a problem. And I've done the Debbie Rowley. I've cranked those, adjust a frame screws pretty hard. And yeah, so it's okay. But I don't know. It's for big pieces, I think it's something I'm going to be very concerned about. For smaller ones, yeah, I don't think I'll worry about it too much. Yeah,
it's not worth the effort to worry about it for a really small piece. You know, a few years ago, someone was dyeing canvas. Had some absolutely gorgeous colors, but the main complaint was that it was so soft.
Yeah.
That it didn't hold up to some of the kinds of stitches that people wanted to do on it. The color of the canvas was stunning and absolutely fabulous, but it didn't stitch well.
Yeah.
And there was nothing you could do. And even on EverTights, I couldn't get it tight enough to do what I wanted to do. I couldn't get it tight enough for my stitching comfort.
Right.
Let's put it that way, because I don't want the canvas to move up or down while I'm stitching on it. I want it to be rigid, as rigid as I can make it. I couldn't get it rigid enough, even with all the tacks that I was doing, even on EverTights, I couldn't get it rigid.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, I'm like that. I like to pull those stitches tight. You know, I want I want to be able to pull on it and have that canvas hold up. So,
yeah.
Because the double fan double is a classic example. If you can't get that tight, it's never going to look right to me.
Threads are not going to lay the way they need to lay, and once you take it off the bars, it's going to relax and look wrong.
Awful.
And you go, well, I thought I had done that just right. But, and you may have, but that's one reason why you need to have the canvas as tight as possible. Because, when my framer gets it, she pulls it very, very tight. And so if I've already got it pulled as tight as possible when I stitched on it, there's not going to be that much give in it as she's pinning it to the foam core.
Right. Right. Yep. Well, another thing I learned. Yep. One thing about it, it's never dull.
And I don't know that there's anything we can do about the quality of the canvas. I just don't know that there's anything we can do about that.
Yeah. Probably not. And I'm sure that Zweigert these days is cranking out canvas as fast as they possibly can. And
I would hope so.
Yeah, if it's off by an eighth of an inch square, I think they're just going to look at you and say, do you want the canvas or not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Yep. So, yeah, so I, dealing with that, but I was looking at your, and Dawn to Dusk, she uses an awful lot of layered stitches, and I was looking at your new, you're doing a class, Harlequin Dance Redux?
Yes.
And you have a layered stitch in there. And yeah. I was interested to pick your brain about that.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that's not... You don't do a lot of that, do you? I don't recall that where you do a stitch and then do something over the top of it. And
I do here and there. And usually what it is the stitch itself lends itself to layers. Like, let's take a Smyrna cross. Smyrna cross is a cross stitch with an upright cross over it. And I will very frequently do the cross stitch in one thread and the upright cross stitch in a different thread. That is technically a layered stitch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not layered the way I did it in the project that I just finished. And that was on my blog site. It's free. Anybody who wants to can get the chart and exactly how I stitched it as I stitched along. And are you referring to the crescents that I did over the Scotch stitches?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That I did after. And I have to, one thing that you have to be cognizant of when you're going to do a layered stitch like that is how easy is it going to be to find the holes to stitch into? And so that's one reason why my layered crescents were in the holes between the Scotch stitches. They were in the channels between the Scotch stitches, because trying to put something over the top of a stitch means that the underlaying stitch is going to get moved aside and not lay as flat and straight as it needs to. And so you have to be really cognizant of the stitches that you're going to do under and the stitches that you're going to do over.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I looked at those, one of the things that came to mind is here's another opportunity to make the piece your own.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, you can add a different pizzazz, if you will, to the design.
Yeah.
Yeah, by stitching, doing a layer over it of some kind. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, and the simplest thing to do is, you know, like let's say the field of Scotch stitches. Let's just say in Harlequin Dance. An easy thing to do would just be to lay diagonal stitches with a metallic over it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could or not couch them down where they intersect, especially if it's over a channel where you can clearly see the holes to stitch into.
Right. And for something like that, you don't want a great big fat Krynek thread to go over that. You want just enough.
Just enough. You know,
yeah.
A number four, number eight braid is plenty. You know, you could even do like a single strand of an overdyed over it just to add a little bit different color.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things that you can do, and especially over a field of fairly solid satin stitching.
Yeah. Yeah. Now there's a place. Yeah. To add a little something. Yep. But yeah, you got me, because the Donda Dust, she does an awful lot of layering, and that's, you know, so
right.
that adds that look. But then when I was looking at that Harlequin Dance piece and saw that you'd done a little bit, that's the fact that you'd done just a little bit, that's kind of got my mind working in terms of, wait a minute, let's look at other stitches and other pieces where I could take, you know, just grab something out of stash. Mm-hmm. And I could add a little sparkle without a lot of effort.
Right.
And put a little something extra into a piece, and not, you know, may not be over the whole piece, you know, might pick your spots, but, and then I'm adding my own personality or my own whatever to the piece and making it mine. And, it just kind of got me thinking about, wait a minute, I need to take a look at really any piece and think about what about putting a layer of something over the top, and what could I get out of that? It's worth experimenting if nothing
right.
else. Yeah.
Well, it is, and you know, and one thing to keep in mind is to balance everything. Usually, within a piece, you want something solid. Forget the teacher who said where the eye can rest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have everything be a focal point. You can't have everything draw attention. You need places that are, you know, a solid color with a satin stitch pattern. So there's a little bit of a pattern there, but it's mostly just a block of solid color. And you need those within a piece, especially if there's a lot going on in other areas. You need those within a piece to let the eye not skim over, but not be pulling focus from other areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Well, and that's basic. That's basic composition, whether it's painting, photography, needlework. Yeah. You need those kinds of things. And, I think that's where I struggle with painted canvas is because somebody told me, you know, what's the most important part in a piece? And, you know, and put
it's
your emphasis there.
The focal point, yeah.
Yeah, put your emphasis there. And then I go, well, there's three that hit me. And so I struggle,
right.
I struggle with that anyway. But, yeah, and then you need those quiet places. You need to just, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's also, and I know who told me this, Linda Rhinemiller. She says that a design needs to have an overall impression that you see from 10 feet, and then more detail that you see from 5 feet, and then even more detail that you see up close. That there should be something going on so that every time you look at it, you see something different.
Now, that's interesting, because for me, it's do you have a composition that makes your eye explore the piece, but I've always done that from a single distance. So there's that other dimension then.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, and you know, just an example, let's say that you have a piece, a canvas piece that has a focal point and then it's got some blank canvas. But how about in the blank canvas, if you take a metallic that very closely matches the color of the canvas and you just do little cross stitches here and there? That would be what you would see up close. Up from a distance, you might see some sparkle that's intriguing that you want to see what else am I looking at? But it would not be your first overall impression. Your first overall impression would be the focal point. It's like, okay, let's look at Royal Garden. Royal Garden, you have this big double fin doubled, and then you build out from there until you get to some of the areas where it's a much lighter color, but it's still interesting to look at.
All right. Now I got to look at things in a different way, 'cause Yeah, well, no, that's good because that adds that second dimension. Because you look at a piece and the composition, does your eye explore it? Do you travel around it and enjoy different areas? And then in needlework, then of course we have the color, and then depending on the stitches, we have texture in different areas.
Right.
But then what happens at 5 and 10 feet?
And you know, it should be intriguing. It should make you want to look and see, well, what else is in that? You know, it's not because if all you have is the focal point, why would you bother stitching a background or anything else at all?
True. Okay.
And
True.
so, you know, to have other things that you see when you look at it up close, makes it more interesting and gives you something to look at every time you look at the piece. Just gonna really say, I'm somewhat oblivious sometimes, and I've even had people explain my designs to me.
Okay.
That, oh, look, so it's doing this, and now it's doing this, and I'm going, oh yeah, I meant to do that, which I'm like. So I'm so glad you saw all of that in that piece.
Yep.
But
Well,
that's an example of
but then
that,
I
you know,
would,
there's something to look at.
But I would see, I would defend you in that you've done enough of them that intuitively, it probably just happens. Or maybe you just don't even think about it and it just happens anyway.
No, I do think about it. You know, I do think about, okay, is there enough focal point of interest in this piece? And I don't want this over here in this corner to detract from that. I want it to enhance. And so I do think about it, you know, and I do try to balance things so that I don't have too much going on in one corner and not enough going on in other, unless I want to do that on purpose, because I don't want it to look unbalanced and to where your head tilts to the lower right corner as you're looking at it, because the piece is balanced that way. So, you know, I do try to achieve some balance, even whether or not it's a symmetrical design, but I try to have some balance in it so that it doesn't appear heavy on one side.
Well, and see, that's the, that enters into it when you talk about making a design your own is, okay, I'm going to adjust this design, but then I got to believe, well, I know you can easily overdo that. You
Yes,
can go too
yes.
far, and then it loses its origins, if you will.
Right, and you know, you don't want the piece to look chaotic. You know, you want to have areas where your eye will stop and then move on, not, oh, where is my eye going to stop on any of this because it's all just a big jumble.
There's that fine balance. Well, and I think that's where good designers come in, is they can find that sweet spot and make it work. And then as a needleworker, if you're going to make it your own, then you have to decide how much gray area there is in adjusting or changing that design before it gets to be too much.
Right.
And of course, that's all personal preference too.
Well, yeah, there is that. But one thing, usually you're going to be safe if you want to add a personal touch to a design, if you just change the texture but not the color. So let's say you have a large area of blue, and so you want to add a little bit to it. So you would just take a blue metallic that's the same color blue, maybe just a little bit different. But that way, you're enhancing it without really pulling a lot of focus or altering the balance of the piece that much.
Hey, that raises another question. When you're putting together a palette and you start with an overdye, say a Karen Collections overdye with multiple colors in it, how do you approach that? Do you take that and say that's going to be my base? And then do you just go and find other threads with colors that essentially match what's in that thread? Or how do you go about that? What is, and maybe you don't even think about it, but
Oh no, I think about it, and that's basically what I do. Like for instance, I'm working on a piece now. I don't know what I'm going to be doing with this piece, but I'm working on it. And you may find this amusing. I'm trying to bring some order into my stitching studio because when we moved in over a year ago, we basically just threw everything in here. And so I've been playing. I know I've got that. Where on earth could it possibly be? And so now I'm trying to bring some order into this. And so one of the things that I'm doing is organizing all of my thread drawers. There is a point to this story. So I was doing my Karen Collection water lilies and getting them all organized and laid out to where I could see what I had and not all be in a jumbled mess. And hanging it on pegboard is not going to work for me. It's too dusty here, and I don't want my threads to get dusty, so they're all in drawers. And so I was laying them out and looking at all these beautiful water lilies and going, "Oh, I haven't stitched anything with that. Oh, I haven't stitched anything with that." Well, I had a project that I was getting ready to kit up, and so I just kind of randomly picked a water lily that I had not worked with before, and the colors in it were well, it had blue in it, which that's always a plus for me, is if it has blue in it. But then it also had some other colors in with it that I thought, okay, now let's see, let's work with something I haven't done before. And so the other colors that I pulled out to work with are orange and olive. Now, I've not worked with these colors all that much, and so I'm kind of interested to see where is this going to go. Am I going to like it? Am I not going to like it? And it's kind of an exercise in working with a palette that I don't normally work with. Now, the colors in the water lilies, the olive and the orange go with it, but they don't match. Okay? And one of the things that I used to do when I'd go to the local shop, which I miss it more than anyone can ever imagine. And I would start pulling threads for a new design. And I always put them back. If I wasn't going to buy them, I always put them back. Usually I would just buy whatever it was that I had gotten out on the table. And I would start looking at them. And usually there would be one or two different colors that would kind of stick up, is what we used to call it, would stick up and call attention to itself as opposed to going with the rest of the color. So we would take those out. And sometimes a shade or two wouldn't work. And so we would take those shades out but leave the rest of the colors. And then sometimes when we would take the threads, and then I would take the threads when I kind of had in mind what I wanted, and I would put them on canvas to find the color of canvas that I wanted to stitch with. And sometimes there would be further refining from there that, okay, this color is completely lost on the canvas. There's no point in having it. Or this color clashes, it goes with the rest of the colors. It clashes too much with the canvas that I want to use. And so it's a big weeding out process of, you start with certain things and then you add to, you take away until you wind up with a palette that you want to start from. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to use all those threads or all those colors, but that's where I'm going to start. But that's basically what it is. You know, I would take an over dye that I wanted to use. I very seldom have in mind a specific color palette. Very seldom. It happens on occasion, but not all that frequently. And then I just start putting threads with it.
Okay, so there's an editing process that goes on before you even start to apply threads to a design. Yeah. And then there's a second editing process when you're saying, all right, now I'm actually going to do this design. And I have these colors. I know that these colors will all work together. And so then when you work on the design, okay, this color is just, it's out. It's one too many. It's not going to, once I start to lay this out, it's just not going to fit. So there's that right. second level for you.
Right.
Hmm. Okay. And then do we have, in the collection, do we then have a really light color and a really dark color to put contrast in, or is that built into this editing process?
Well, usually I will try to have multiple shades of the main colors.
Okay.
Usually. And sometimes I will have a completely random color in there that goes with everything else, but it's the only shade that I have of that color.
Mm-hmm.
And I may or may not use it. If I do use it, I'm going to use it very sparingly. Like the yellow in Royal Garden.
Yeah. Okay. So there's just, it's very bright. It's going to catch your eye anyway. So keep right. it to a minimum, but it adds a right. little something.
It adds a little something. It enhances, you know, Tony Manieri calls it the poison color. The poison color isn't necessarily in the palette that you're using, but it enhances the colors that you're using and makes them brighter or heightens the contrast between them. It adds that little dimension to the palette.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay.
And I don't frequently concentrate on that. But you know, okay. So you need to have a basic understanding of a color wheel. And if you don't have a color wheel, everybody needs to have a color wheel. You can pick one up real cheap at Hobby Lobby. Everybody needs a color wheel. So that you understand about analogous colors, which are next to each other on the color wheel, and they will go together. Or complementary colors, colors that are opposite each other on the color wheel, and they will go together, mm-hmm. like orange and blue.
Mm-hmm.
Or green and purple.
Yeah.
But, you know, blue, green, and purple are they're analogous colors next to each other on the color wheel. And so if you get the right tone, the right shade, the colors are going to work. And my theory, my philosophy is that every color works with every color if you have the right shade of the color or okay. the right hue of the color.
Mm-hmm.
But every color will work with every color.
Okay. All right. I find this... I just find this stuff interesting because I am just terrible with colors. And well, I am. And I know part of it is this, you know, my male red-green color blindness and a lifetime of staying away from colors because every time I dealt with colors as a kid, I was wrong. And,
now,
you know.
Yeah. Okay. So there is... And I can't cite the study, of course, but I did see this, and it is proven that men see fewer colors than women do.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a biological fact. Women see more colors than men do. And, you know, so it's like my husband says that colors, there's basic colors, and they all have modifiers. There's light, dark, and off. Okay. So beige would be off-white. Because it's not white.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's light brown, dark brown, and brown.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, you know, if I'm saying, oh, no, that's peach. He doesn't know right. what color is peach. It's
yeah.
light orange.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't need the research to agree with that because, you know, I mean, I spend time with any female talking about colors, and what, where'd you see that? You know,
cause,
yeah. And I don't see them. And so I know, I mean, I struggle with it. And I mean, I know there's some point in my youth where I quit saying whether it was blue or purple, because it was a 50-50 shot for me. And I was,
whether it was one or the other.
Right. And it was, because it was always somewhere in between, you know, because it was a solid blue, I could tell it was blue. And it was a dead purple, you know, royal purple, I could tell that. But you put any variation in that, and I was in trouble.
Like blue violet.
Right. Oh, yeah. Spare me that. You know, just spare me that. You know, so even in school, you know, what color is this? It's that color. I don't want to hear about it. And I don't want to hear that I'm wrong in front of the entire class for the 50th time, you know? And, you know, so that, so you just, for me, I just grow up and it's just that color or that color. And I really hesitate to name the color because I'm probably going to be wrong. And,
well, and I understand that. And, you know, my advice would be to try to always look at the pure colors or the pure hues of a color, as opposed to the ones that are mixed in with the next shade. So straight blues instead of blue greens.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, and that's,
and what, then you can go light and dark and medium, and those shades will work together. And, you know, if you have a DMC color card, a lot of times they're all laid out nicely next to each other. So, you know, that these shades will all work together because they're all in the color family.
Yep. I love that card.
I do too. And I use it frequently. Yeah. And, Presentia's color card is laid out a little bit differently. It's somewhat similar, but it's a little bit different. But I also like their color card as well.
Yeah. Well, so that's where, you know, when I say I'm terrible, because then of course people think, well, I can't see colors. No, I see color. I see all the color. You know, I see it all. But you start getting into those finer areas, and I get in trouble in a hurry. And you start asking me names of colors, and you know, I'm checking out of you because I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna be right, and I'm just gonna avoid the conflict. You know. So it's. Yeah, so it's just, so colors, I just struggle with colors, and I think that's why, that's probably a big part of why blue is my favorite color, because it's safe.
Yes, it's very safe, and it's easy to see that's true blue, that's not blue-green, that's not blue-purple or blue-violet, or, you know, that's true blue.
Right.
So, yeah. Color wheels, I think, are a tool that as stitchers we oftentimes will overlook, but they really do help quite a bit.
And see there, you know, I don't own a color wheel, so I should get a color wheel. Okay.
You probably should.
Yeah.
You can get a little one, you can get a great big one, but you should get a color wheel. Yep. Because if you have any interest at all in devising your own color palettes, it will help quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should probably do that because I have interest in learning, but every time Trish Burr's book on color, I have sat down and read that thing, and pretty soon my head just starts spinning. And
it's too much information to take in all at once. And I have a tendency not to read theory so much as to just do practical applications. But a lot of times you can just tell by looking, this color works with this color. This color doesn't work with this color.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that would help me. So, okay.
And I would further add, if you're going to use, if you're going to try to do your own palette, like for instance, the one that I'm working with, I have a true blue. Okay. It's a light shade of blue, but it is a pure blue. And the olive that I'm using is not a solid, you know, it's not pure green. But it's an olive green. It's a yellowish green.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't put in like a yellowish green and a blue violet and too many shades, I mean, stick with a true shade as your base. And then you could go with olive. You could go with a yellow green, which, you know, olive is a yellow green, as opposed to, if I were doing blue, violet, and olive, which, you know, those colors might work together too. I don't know. But, you know, just talking out loud.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Because I have interest. See, I have interest in learning to put together color palettes that work. I have to get over X number of years of just being wrong. So.
Well, you can always take, you know, a piece that you like and just say, swap out one color in the palette instead of doing the whole thing. Just take out one color.
Baby steps.
Or substitute a color.
Yeah. That's probably where I should start.
Until you've built your confidence.
I'll be dead by then.
Oh, Gary.
That'll take way too many years. Won't. No, that's okay. No. So that's interesting. That gives me a starting spot. Yeah, just change one color.
Yeah, just one color.
Don't try and do everything. Yeah. All right. I learned things, but we got to stop.
Okay.
Bummer. Okay. So tonight, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, don't miss out. Trish and Wynn, it's going to be a good one. And Sunday's guest, now this is another one. Sunday's guest, and I'll get this name wrong, I know I will, is Cecilia Ajayi. I believe, and Celia Jai is J-A-Y-I, Celia J-A-Y-I Designs. This is different. She does, everything she does is beading, and it's three-dimensional beading.
Wow.
Yeah. Most fascinating. Most fascinating.
Yeah, so. See, my brain can't wrap itself around that.
I watched a couple of videos of her, and I'm not sure I wrap my brain around it either. But, yeah, she does. And she puts beads down of all kinds, and she uses a lot of seed beads. So she's doing little stuff and builds them up and does a lot of abstract work, fascinating work. Fascinating. So that's Sunday's guest. Yep. Something different. Mm-hmm. All right. Debbie, that's going to be it, I think. Yep.
Okay.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
I always like talking to you, Gary.
We have a good time. And thanks to Jiminy for joining us this week. That was fun.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
So it sounds like Jiminy's gone off to take a nap now. So that's good. Yep.
Yes. I hope so.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.